You're listening to Ride Along, EMT School. I'm Mike.
And I'm Max. We're two students navigating EMT school, bringing you along week by week.
And I'm Jonathan, a paramedic, bringing real-world perspective.
Join us as we share the lessons, challenges, and stories from EMT school, and hear insights from those already living the EMS life. Welcome to the Ride Along. Love this song, man. I guess copyright no jazz. Can you copyright an AI song? I don't know. But welcome to episode 2, right?
Diving into EMS.
Diving into EMS. This is us talking about our first class.
Yep.
Our first week of classes going through EMT school. So if you want to hear about why we're taking or what like the process of getting into EMT school, you should check out episode 1. And on this episode, we're talking about how two old guys are going to survive and what it was like going back to school in 2025.
We're going to make it through.
40 and how old are you? Like 65?
Or? At least 72.
You look at
least 72. At least 72. 49.
You're 49? Mm-hmm. When do you turn 50?
A year from this September 30th.
If you're 49 now, wouldn't...
I'm close enough that I'm friggin' 40.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you're...
I'm over the whole...
We're talking EMT stuff. You can't go close enough. Like, you got to make sure that you're being specific.
Mm. Patients will give you information like that.
Yeah.
They're like, how old are you? Oh, I'm 49. And then you'll get their birthday. And it's like, wait, since you're 48.
Why are you close lying enough. To me? What do you want?
I'm taking their word for it. But yeah, so welcome everybody. And, you know, this is the Ride Along, yeah. EMT school.
And hopefully you watched episode 1 and you enjoyed it. And you're here for episode 2 because you were so enthralled.
And you came back.
Exactly.
Probably for Jonathan. I mean,
that's what I'm thinking.
That's what I would come back for is, you know, hey, it's two oafs that are going through school and one guy who actually knows what he's talking about. That's what I think mm-hmm. about, you know, that
just
that brings value
he's
to this
floating here in midair, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's too bad. You know what? I'm really hoping at some point over the course of EMT school, Jonathan, that we get to see in person.
We should guilt him into it for sure.
Yeah. We might be able to make that happen.
Yeah.
Let's see how this contract goes. And,
yeah.
We might be able to make that
either
happen.
Way. I enjoy seeing you. So, you know, we all like to get together. We all like to practice, to train, mm-hmm. and it would be a lot of fun to kind of like, you know, share the skills in person. Mm-hmm. Actually, you know, I do have a question for you. Actually, sure. Wait, let's get into that in a second, because we do have some official things that we should do yeah. every episode yes. before we start getting into chatting. First thing is sponsorships.
Yes.
We do have sponsorship mm-hmm. opportunities available. So if you're listening to this and you want to tell the world about the awesome doodad thing that you are selling that has anything to do with the EMS or EMT world, we'd love to hear about it. And you have an opportunity to get the word out about it here. We really like sharing that type of stuff with our audience and exposing good people to good things. Yep. So.
And we have sponsors available on all different levels.
Yep.
Reach out to Mike at ridealongpodcasting@gmail.com.
That's correct. Yes. So with that, our episode this week is going to be talking about Max and mine.
Me and Max's.
Me and Max's experience in our first week of school and some of the introductory topics that we learned from our first class.
Yep.
But, you know, one of those questions that I have, which actually isn't related to either one of those, which I'm going to put Jonathan on the spot for, maybe Ooh. He knows.
Sure.
Do you have to do patient contacts for EMT stuff in the state that you're in?
Typically, yes.
Okay.
Typically, when you're in an EMT program or any sort of EMS training program, where your class originates, you do have to... you do have to do all your patient contacts. You do have to do all your ride time in the state
okay.
where that course originated. It's an accreditation thing.
Yes.
So yeah, we've got another community college just over the border about 20 miles into West Virginia, and they have a paramedic program. And unfortunately, those guys can't come over here and ride, even though they could, because of geography, they can't, because of the rules regarding, you know, accreditation and that sort of thing.
Right. Well, I got excited last episode when you were talking about the fact that you helped teach EMTs.
I knew it.
Oh, well, I wonder if I could just go visit Virginia, which I have a muddled history with the state of Virginia.
But, he does. He loves Virginia.
I was like, oh, well, that would be fun if I could go do patient contact stuff down there.
You even have recently have gotten something that proclaims your love of Virginia.
Yeah, somebody sent me a Virginia State Police challenge coin in the mail today after I shared a story in some other circles about the experience of getting pulled over once in my youth in Virginia for not doing anything crazy. I swear, like, I am not a crazy driver at all. No, my friends will attest to that.
He is a conservative.
I'm a boring driver, have always been a boring driver. Virginia has a whole racket that goes on with out of state. I'm not even going to get into
it. It'll be an hour.
This is a podcast about, like, you know, espousing the greatness of emergency service workers. And that conversation is not going to help with that.
No, it will not.
Yes. So that was the question that popped into my head, was like, oh, it'd be cool if I can go down that way.
Imagine we could both go down there.
So after class, you guys should come down, because the agencies that I work for do allow just people interested in doing a ride along to come do ride alongs. So you could come do a ride along. You might not get to do any sort of EMT skills, but you could see what I do and where I do it and participate that way.
I would 100% be down for that.
I volunteer.
Yep.
Yeah. Come on down.
I'll even drive so he doesn't have to drive.
Great. That would be awesome. I will definitely take you up on that. Especially to kind of meet and experience all different types of you know, environments in this lovely EMS world. Oh, Jonathan's video keeps freezing.
It does. It's okay. Look at the smile.
He's got a great smile on. It's an audio podcast anyway. So.
And people still like him better than us.
So this is our first templated podcast episode. So, each week we're going to have some regular segments, one from each of us, as well as discussions around certain topics. So, the one that I wanted to do each week is called the medical term of the week.
Yeah.
And the reason why I'm doing it first each week is because I organize the podcast and write the notes. So it goes in first. No, it's actually because, it may wind up being part of the discussion for that week's podcast.
It probably will.
It makes sense for us to kind of put it at the top of the things that we'll talk about for the week, and kind of sets the information. And so, and this is my way of solidifying my own knowledge, and things that I've learned for the week too. And what's great about having Jonathan here is he can tell me if I'm wrong, because I don't fact check this stuff. This is just from my notes and things that I've kind of put together. It's great to have somebody be like, no, actually it's not that specifically. It's like this, but you got the general gist of it.
Just tell him you, sir, are wrong.
Yes. I need that in my life. I need people telling me I'm wrong.
Yeah. It's good to have someone that berates you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to sharpshoot you like that, Mike.
So we'll kick this off. The medical term of episode one is level one trauma center. I'd always heard that, right? Like, it was something that, like, is a term thrown around, like, oh yeah, this place over here, it's a level two. That's not good enough. Or it's a level three or a level one. Oh, level, like, and then it's like, well, what's better, level one or five? You know, turns out level one, way better than five.
I the only thing I ever knew was, if you can, level one's better than the rest. That's the extent of my information before class.
Now, one thing I could use your help with, Jonathan, is for the level system, what I couldn't find a definitive answer on, and I'm sure I could just look harder, is it just in response to trauma center? Are there other terms for levels or other disciplines that require different levels?
Typically, when we talk about trauma center levels, we are specifically talking about trauma.
Okay.
There are some other specialty designations, yeah, like burn centers.
Yep.
Not strokes. Every level one. Yeah. Stroke centers.
Cardiac centers. Yep.
Yeah. Yep. Pediatrics.
And pediatrics. Yeah. And not every hospital that is a level one trauma center is going to have the same capability in all of those categories.
Right. Yes.
Some hospitals are going to specialize in burns. Being said, a level one trauma center is probably more equipped than a lot of places to deal with that. But usually that's something they're going to, as soon as they can stabilize that patient, they're going to ship out to that specialty center.
Right. So, what we learned this week, one of the first thing, and like we're going through the gamut of kind of EMS mm-hmm. overview, right? And essentially, you know, for lack of a better term, the purpose of EMS is to get patients from the scene where they get hurt mm-hmm. to a hospital, yep. right? And that process actually has a lot of decision-making in it and a lot of the experience and knowledge of an EMT is utilized when they're deciding where to bring a patient. Sometimes they'll decide, oh, I want to go here, or I want to go to this place. Okay, well, if it's a certain thing, they can kind of bring them there. But it's also one of the things that an EMT or a paramedic or whoever is on the ambulance needs to know, hey, is this a patient that is appropriate for this hospital, or is it better to take them to this hospital? Like, is it better to drive an extra 4 or 5 minutes to bring them to a stroke care center versus, you know, bringing them to the closest trauma center? That may be something that, you know, there is discretion involved that the EMS provider has to understand.
I actually had a personal experience with that. When I was very young, I was hit in the eye with a stick. And my mother...
You probably deserved it.
I did. I 100% did. But my mom knew that because of the way the hit was done and because of the damage, that my best bet for saving the eye was to go directly to a surgery center that specialized in eye care.
Mm-hmm.
So my mom insisted that the paramedics, instead of taking me to the local trauma center, took me directly to Will's Eye, which is basically an eye surgery center. They specialize in it.
Yeah.
Right. And the doctor straight up was very straightforward. He said, if you had not done this, there was a chance that he could have lost the eye.
Yeah.
So
levels when it comes to trauma centers have a designation, right? So there are 5 levels: level 1, level 2, level 3, level 4, level 5. And the easy breakdown is essentially there's two categories. This is how my brain works. Level 1 and level 2 are essentially the same thing for the end user, like us as people or as EMTs. They essentially have the same capability. Level 1 is a distinction for like kind of going above and beyond just the capability. It's also furthering the knowledge base of trauma in terms of they are not just a full service trauma center. They are also a teaching and research center. Mm-hmm. So that seems to be the kind of defining factor of what makes it a level 1, as well as having a fully staffed trauma specialist team in-house 24/7.
Yep.
Yes.
So level 2 has access to all those people. They have to. However, they may not always all be in the hospital at one time. So a level 1 does.
Right. They may be on call.
You're right. So that's a distinction. Like, it may mean that in times of, like, you know, severe congestion or overflow, a level 1 may have an advantage over a level 2 in terms of having somebody immediately available. But essentially, for the end user, us normal people, EMTs, you know, the people that have to make decisions on where to go, a level 2 is essentially as good as a level 1 mm-hmm. for anything that, you know, we're going to be making a decision on, sure. right? When it gets below that, levels 3, 4, and 5, that's when it starts getting into, they're not great. Like if you have a traumatic injury, a level 3 is obviously going to be better than a level 4. 4 is going to be better than a level 5. And 5 is going to be better than just staying somewhere on the side of the road. Like, essentially, I think.
Listen, we can leave you here on the side of the road, or you can go to level 5. What do you prefer?
Yeah.
Well, this grass is very comfortable.
So level three means that it has a surgery and ICU with limited specialists. So that's pretty good. You know, like surgery and ICU, most likely they're going to transfer out for trauma. Like it's sure. likely that they will transfer mm-hmm. to a level two or a level one. A level four only has an ER stabilization, meaning they don't have a surgery center, or maybe they do, but it's not the specialist for trauma. Right. So it's almost guaranteed at that point where if you have a traumatic injury, you're going to a level four center. They're already, you know, lining up the transport for you to get to the level one or two.
You're just they're a way station to get you to a better facility.
And level five is like not even an ER, mm-hmm. like it's basic stabilization only, which I don't even know. Is that like a urgent care center?
Well, that's what I was wondering. Like, where is something like patient first fall into that category?
You know, I'm to be honest, guys, I'm not even really sure.
Right? Yeah.
Where I'm at, we've got a level four, and then about 45 minutes away, there is a level one, and then a level two, right 10 miles down the road from it.
Yeah.
So oftentimes we try to utilize helicopter EMS, mm-hmm. or if we can't utilize that, we will have to go to that level four, and then the ER will have to stabilize. Stabilize that patient, but yeah, we don't have any sort of general surgery or anything like that. That's routinely done.
Yeah. It's a
limitation in our area. I don't even know how a level five would what that would look like.
Yeah, that was like the one kind of area where I was like, it's not very clear exactly as to what falls into level five category. It seems to be like, well, if they don't even have an ER, I wouldn't even necessarily consider them a hospital personally, but that's the breakdown. So, you know, if you have the opportunity or if you ever have to make the choice, level two, level one, that's your kind of, you know, your go-to. I'm super lucky. I knew beforehand that the hospital that I have nearby was pretty fantastic. But so we learned some things this week. Mac's going to get into a tool later in the episode that really kind of makes hospitals shine and is really awesome. I just realized how awesome the hospital I have that's 7 minutes drive from my house.
Yeah, Lehigh is fantastic.
Lehigh Valley Cedar Crest is like a level one trauma center, level two pediatric trauma center, stroke center, cardiac center, burn center, you name it, it's a center.
Yep.
And it's like, the only other center, like it's Lehigh Valley Cedar Crest. And then like the next hospital that has that high of a credentialing is like Philadelphia and Pittsburgh. So like those three centers in Pennsylvania are like huge. So I'm like, oh, well, great. I have a very close, awesome, you know, trauma center and it's good to know. But there's tons of other hospitals around and they all have different capabilities. The one that kept rising to the top in our discussions in class and what seems to be the one that usually leads to urgent situations and things that you want to know right away, trauma centers and the levels for trauma centers seems to be, that was a key takeaway for me that week.
Well, I mean, that's basically our responsibility as EMTs is to provide, you know, stabilizing care and transport. So like it's very, very high on the priority list of knowing where the hell you're going.
Yes. So that's our medical term of the week. And with that, we can get into our discussions, which for this week, I have like, it's tough because I'm the one going through it with you, Max, but I also want to add, like, there's questions that I think would be really interesting to ask. Like, what was it like going back to school? Like,
it's been a long time.
When was the last time you were in school?
1994.
94. And what type of school was it?
High school.
So you were in high school in 1994.
Yes.
Man, you're old.
I am.
That was the year that I just had a conversation about movies that came out that year. By the way, 1994, huge movie year.
Like, and music and across the board.
But, you know, just if you look up like Shawshank Redemption came out in 1994.
There's a laundry list of them.
Yeah, it's really good. Okay, so so 94 was the last time you were in school that you had a formal, like, oh, class, I need to be in a week-to-week class situation. That's pretty...
It was a long time ago.
Was it jarring?
No, it wasn't jarring. I mean, it was kind of familiar. The chairs suck.
they are not great.
I went to go sit down in the chairs before he got there. I went to go sit down in the damn chair, and I almost went right on my butt because the chair just has wheels and no stops and this flip-out thing that wants to move on its own. Like, I almost went right on my ass immediately because the chairs are horrible. Horrible.
But that was this key takeaway for the week. These chairs are garbage. Horrible. They're actually made to be like the most they're like cushioned and they have like backs that rock back and forth, but it just makes for a chair that's like really like loose. By the end of each class, I'm like sliding out of the chair.
Yes. Yes. But no, I mean it was interesting. Definitely a different perspective going into it. Because I'm not going into it with really any anxiety or any of that part of it.
It's kind of low stress.
Yeah. I mean, I've done enough continued learning. If I had never taken any classes, including the classes that I've taken, then that would have been a different ball.
It would have been hella intimidating. Yes. Like,
but no, I mean, it was an interesting, it was very interesting as I sat there, as more people filed in young. Oh crap, that's the instructor. Young. Like everyone is half my age.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an interesting perspective. It's like, wow, I know I'm old, but like I'm really old.
You are.
Yeah, really I am. But yeah. Other than that, I mean it wasn't bad.
Yeah. Well, you went through it when you were younger, right, Jonathan?
I did, yeah. I was 20.
Now so we in our class, like I would say the student demographics is on average, because there's a few girls. There's three girls out of what, 20 students?
16.
Okay. Max apparently counts. They're for the most part, 18 is the youngest, right? And
the one girl is 17. Mm-hmm. She's actually still in high school.
Yep. And then, you know, I think the oldest
18 to 25.
18 to 25.
I think there's one there that might be a little older looking at him, but the rest of them. I mean, one guy was definitely in the service. Not that that means he's that much older, but he was definitely service and did firefighting after. So he's probably mid to late 20s.
Yeah. So I would consider them all like, you know, early 20s, maybe a few younger. A heavily slanted towards male.
Mm-hmm.
I would say 80% are firefighters or associated with a firefighting like organization in some way. Like some of them didn't say they were firefighters, but they said, yeah, I volunteer at, you know, so-and-so firehouse.
And two of the women were actually there because of going to medical school.
Yes. So a few are pre-med and they're viewing this as an opportunity. I would assume it's probably a good way to work your way through mm-hmm. medical school. So I would like, was that in line with what you experienced?
I mean, the profession has a good mix of people in it. You know, even my class, I mean, there were people across the age gambit, you know, men and women. I think the youngest person in my EMT class, she was 16, which is the youngest that you can be.
Which is awesome.
And she's sharp. She has gone on to become a paramedic and get her bachelor's degree and do a whole bunch of stuff. So she kind of knew going in that she wanted to do this as a career. She was the youngest in our class, but we had people that were in their 50s and, you know, more recently, like as I have been more on the, precepting and education side of the house, we're seeing students come through our local programs that are exactly like that. They are across the gamut age-wise. I think I had a retired nurse who wanted to come to EMT school with her granddaughter, and she was in her 70s.
That's awesome.
Damn.
And yeah, so I mean, I see people from all walks of life and people from all backgrounds coming into emergency medical services.
Yeah.
It doesn't surprise me to hear that it's slanted that way for you guys, but each class is going to be different. So you may have your class may be slanted that way, but then the next class may be a completely different mix of people.
And I think it would probably depend as well on the agency or whoever's sponsoring that class. Like, it's going to be heavily, you know, based off the demographics that they're in their circles. So like, I think firefighters for the most part, the ones that I've met tend to skew male.
Yeah.
But I mean, that has been getting more even over the course of the last, my lifetime. Like, you know, there's those things that like were traditionally male programs. So it's just to say that like, it's all trending towards a more inclusive and more diverse set of people that are all going through this and representing like, what is this kind of EMS world? Right. Mm-hmm. So that was one thing that struck me was like, oh wow, this feels young, which makes sense because it seems to be a career. Like, and that's what impressed me most about some of the students too, is like a lot of people came in there going, hey, you know what? I want to take a career change. Like I want to go in a different approach in my career. And I'm like in one breath going, wow, that's really like, I would have never had the chutzpah to like, you know, make that decision at 25. I'd be like, no, I gotta commit to this for the next 10 years I'm, you know, ruining everything that came before. And then at the same time being like old man Fiore, who's like, youngin, you've never even had a career yet. How could you change it? So like,
and I would say it was about almost half the class.
Yeah.
At least a third of them were said the same thing on repeat. Like, you know, this is they want a different job or they want to, you know, branch off into a different part of what they've been doing.
Yeah. Actually, the one that really stuck with me is I think there was one guy who said he was a pool tech.
Yep.
Like he like, you know, fixes and manages pools.
Sure.
And he's like, I want to change into something else. And like, I think the theme that was maybe not necessarily expressly said was, you know, they're searching for a job, a career with meaning, which is really, I think the thing that resonates the most with like all of this, where it's like, yeah I'm looking for a job and I want to do a job and I want to do something professionally, but I want to do something that matters, which is the kind of thing that I really got from everybody so far.
Yep.
You know, especially the instructors.
Speaking of which, what did you think of the instructors?
I thought they were the material is dry, which is difficult for every instructor, you know, especially being, you know, I look at it pragmatically from somebody who instructs, right? Like I teach, you know, different types of things. And it's difficult when you have a prescribed program that you have to teach to. Mm-hmm. So I think they do a very good job at explaining the context and the meaning as well as can be expected for being provided a presentation that is like death by PowerPoint.
It is a little bit of death by PowerPoint.
Each instructor is going to have a different skill set in terms of, you know, illustrating through words the things that you're looking at on a screen, right? It is difficult because, like, this PowerPoint, like, I've seen good PowerPoints. Like, PowerPoint gets a bad rap sometimes because, like, it's used poorly. This is one of those types of situations where the material made is poor because it's literally just six bullets on a page, on a screen, where it's like, it's just a bunch of words. So every once in a while there will be a picture, and then that perks me up because I'm like, oh, look, something I can look at other than just text. But I'm a little bit biased. I come from a career in...
Biased is a very conservative term, I would say, sir.
It's tough for me. Like, I am a communicator. Like, that is my profession, right? Like... Mm-hmm. I've been in graphic design and advertising for the last 20 years, and like presenting is a core discipline for me, and teaching is part of that. So it's to say that I think the instructors do a very good job, and I find them very personable, and I find them very passionate about what they do.
And they all have an amazing amount of, like, you can tell that this isn't just simply them checking off a box. Like, they have a depth of knowledge on everything that they're taught, not just the textbook side of things, but in the practical use of them.
Yeah.
That was very clear very quickly.
But one thing to keep in mind as you're going through this class process, right? We're talking about week one here for you guys. Typically week one of any EMT class is kind of that orienting week. So yeah. there's a lot of information, and some of it's kind of dry.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe not the most exhilarating. We were talking about the demographics. Most people going to EMT school, they have a little bit of that, like, we want to get up and do the thing.
Yes.
So it's hard to sit in a classroom sometimes.
It is.
But you got to express that information at the beginning of class, as far as the history and legal and all that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Use a little bit of drier material. I promise it will probably get better for you guys as you go into the class and get into the more in-depth topics and the meat and potatoes of the class.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I think we have legal and ethical is going to be our next episode. However, I will say that of those topics, Max and I were probably the most vocal and engaged, only because I think those particular types of topics are ones that, like, are probably most fascinating to people who have lived longer and seen a lot of things. Right. Like, you know, I like the nuance and figuring out, like, well, what does, like, you know, this thing, like, what am I ethically obligated to do? Like, you can't tell me my ethics. And like I have a more, you know, I have a different like perspective than some of the younger students. So I found that stuff quite fascinating. And what I do enjoy is that there is discussion and there's context and there's stories of how those things apply. I think that's where these instructors really shine, is like they have a huge depth of experience, and then they can pull the concepts into, hey, you know, I was on this ride, like this call once where this happened. I was in this type of place. I had to move a patient using this technique, or I had to do this thing, you know, or my partner ran into this thing, and that's invaluable. Like, you cannot replace that.
Another thing I would say too is, like, they had decent time management. Like, they they were on, they had their schedule, they had their timing down, they knew where they were going with it. So, like, that was good to see, because that could easily have been 11 o'clock if you had some rambling, monotone individual.
I do not like having to stick to a class until 10 p.m.
You should have seen the smile on his face when day two we got to leave a little early.
Little early. Like, it was 10 minutes early we left.
After they expressly said, we're going to be here to 10 o'clock.
But we came 10 we were 10 minutes early. Yeah. No, I'm a bit, like, I understand there are standards. And this is just, like, beyond our personal experience, I respect the process. I'm willing to go through the 188 hours. In general, though, I find that, like, specific rules, meaning, like, or specific time hacks, like they have to be in a classroom for 4 hours each time, is not an appropriate or an effective tool for making sure somebody learns something.
Yeah, it's not important for learning. It's just
it's an accreditation thing.
It's an accreditation thing, and I get it. But, like, what we should be doing, and this is as an educator, right? Mm-hmm. You should be doing qualitative like management of performance of teachers, not quantitative.
Yep.
So, like, that's like teaching to tests and making sure they're in a classroom for 4 hours. That does not substitute for somebody just being a good teacher.
Yep.
So giving them a little leeway, and, like, are they grasping the concept? Are they not? Do we need to go a little later, or are they good with this for tonight? And we've accomplished it. Like, those are things that I'm like, I'm an adult. Like, I wish the program was a bit more, like, oriented towards, like, what we can do in the commercial space, where it's like, hey, we have flexibility to make discretion of, like, have they grasped the concept?
Yeah.
But I get it. It's you got to do it. Like, you have to have a standard.
Yeah.
It's you know, just to touch on what you were talking about with, like, our backgrounds in that commercial training space versus this more like public state government run training space. You know, when you throw in accrediting bodies, right? So like an Iron Force Consulting Group class, I'm the only one that's accountable for that information. And, you know, I do have that leeway, but when we start talking about all that other stuff, you don't have it. You've got to go by what the state says, and there's a purpose for it. It's a drag sometimes, and maybe not the most effective, but there is a purpose for it.
It's the nature of taking courses, right? Like you have to be able to flex into the different types of environments, and that's something I'm like personally is like I took some college courses over the last couple of years as well, you know, to take an additional associate's degree in computer programming because I'm a sadist apparently, and I can't stop myself from taking classes on stuff. That was also the same type of thing where it's like, this is a very rigid prescribed teaching process that I did not particularly enjoy, but you know, you get through it so that you can try and get as much as you can out of it. This is not that at all. Like I may sound critical of it, like, oh, it's not optimal or whatever, but, it's certainly effective even in a week or so of taking courses. Like I've learned stuff. And part of that too is like, I've learned how to be a better student throughout my life as well.
Sure.
But yeah, it's totally acceptable. And the instructors are super knowledgeable and personable. And like those are the guys where I'm like, that's the reason where it's like every week I'm going in like, hey, I wonder what so-and-so is going to be able to like, kind of like, what's his perspective on this? And that'll be, the thing I have to look forward to.
To reemphasize it for you guys and for anybody that's listening, I promise it will get better. Those first few classes are going to be a little bit dry potentially, but once you start getting your hands involved and you know, you start doing some of the skills, you will be way, way more engaged.
Yep.
So just hang tough. If you're like, man, I don't know if this is for me, hang tough through the initial part. And once you get your hands involved, you should be able to,
for sure. We've had a little bit of that. Episode 3, we're going to talk about moving patients. Sure. And that was our first kind of like hands-on. At the end of the first night, we did have some hands-on stuff.
They threw us a box of tourniquets.
And I was like, that's great. This I know.
Yeah.
I'm like, what? The crazy part was it was 9:55, right? Yeah. The class goes till 10. And we're like, oh, we're done. It's 5 minutes. And like the instructors are like, nope, I have you for 5 more minutes. And he throws out a box of tourniquets to the room and goes, now we're going to practice tourniquet use. And I go, I can't even argue with this. Like, this is good. Like, this is an effective use of 5 minutes of time.
Scary part.
I'm impressed.
The scary part was watching impressed. Some of the firemen and all looking at I'd say more than half the class were like good to go.
But like, we come from a much different background. True. Like, we come from a martial training background where tourniquets are almost like, you know, religious idols.
I know.
So, like, we have to look at it as like the rest of the world look at it that way,
right?
And this is something they're gauging for the first time.
But
and
it was a great way to like immediately, because everyone was kind of, they had lost a lot of people at that point, and it was a great way of like ratcheting everyone right back in again.
Yeah,
was awesome.
It's like, hey, we're gonna be active for 5 minutes before we leave. Like, okay, I'm cool with that. Yep. Like, I wish this came earlier though. Like, I would have loved this at like halfway through. Like,
right.
More things like that I would love. But it was so fun to like have something in the class where like they threw us out some tourniquets and Max and I look at each other and go, and like before anybody's even doing anything, we both have a tourniquet on our arms and we're not taking them off of ourselves because we've been trained to not take our own tourniquets off and all these other things. So we're like, oh, okay, well, yeah, I'm already tourniqueted. Is that the tourniqueted?
You have a tourniquet on.
You have a tourniquet on.
I don't remember.
Tourniqueted. So we're there. The instructor hasn't even explained to everyone yet. And I'm like, this is probably gonna be the only time in this class where I'm like, I know this one thing really well. Yeah. Everything else is zero.
He kept on turning to either me or Mike about to say something, watched us, and I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, this is the one thing.
The one thing.
Yeah. I mean, if we get into traumatic injuries and packing wounds, we'll probably be pretty good too.
But, yes.
So we did have that little touch there. But what were some of the topics that we went through for the night or for that first class, Max?
So the first topic was what is EMS?
Yeah.
Like, so basically explain like what it is.
The overview, right?
The overview, like what the different levels of being EMS mean and what you can do, what you can't do, what you're expected to do, what your training should
yep.
be. Also, just a history of EMS, going over how it started, where it began. And then also things like advanced life support and basic life support.
Right. So, like, I think it does take, it would behoove the audience or behoove us to tell the, I don't know how behoovement means or works. I think it would be beneficial to anyone listening for us to take a moment to just explain, like, hey, for anybody who doesn't know, there's different levels of this stuff.
Yep.
Max and I are going for EMT school, right?
Yes.
But that is just one, I'm going to call it a rank. Is that a rank like a good term?
Level of training. Yeah,
level of training, a certification. There are 1, 2, 3, 4 main levels, right?
Correct.
So EMR is at the is the entry level. That's emergency medical responder.
Right, which basically a policeman would fall into that category.
Maybe.
A fireman.
Yeah, Jonathan, I'm sure, could probably give us a better.
So EMR, and all of the certification levels we're going to talk about are typically administered through the National Registry of EMTs.
Mm-hmm.
And so EMR is that fundamental life-saving training that teaches some people some skills, that teaches them some very, very, very basic trauma and cardiac life support skills. And from that point, they can respond quicker. You got to think, you have a limited number of ambulances, but you might have a fire company that's closer. And if they've got some EMRs, those EMRs are able to beat that rescue squad in.
Right.
Just because of geography. So the hope is that you can get that EMR there. They can start administering these very, very basic life-saving things. And they can go from there. The big differences between an EMR and an EMT is the EMR is typically not sanctified to transport a patient to the hospital.
Right.
Right.
That seems to be the big. So, like, they make EMR training more approachable, meaning it's less time investment. Right. So EMR is entry level, and they encourage as many people to get it as possible because it's not so much the professional level, if you will. Like as a profession, people may not be EMRs as often, but a profession may want someone to be an EMR within that profession, it seems like. So, like, if you have a site security or a industrial complex, other first responders, it seems like that was the kind of those are the people that are encouraged to be EMRs, maybe even schools to have EMRs on staff. So, like, the people who are already there, the more of them that we can get out there, the better.
Yeah.
And then, and then the people who ride the ambulances who need to get, like, hey, someone got hurt, an EMR's hopefully on scene already. If they're not, an EMT will come in. They will try to stabilize them and then get them going to where they need to go. Right. So that's the EMR. EMT EMT basic is what we're going to school for.
Yeah. So a lot of places, the National Registry has dropped the basic portion, but for the longest time it was that EMTB EMT basic. Now across the board, they're just known as EMTs,
emergency
medical technicians.
I think in Pennsylvania we are, like, there is still the distinction, but I could be wrong.
And it could be that, but the National Registry has dropped the basic portion. It is emergency medical technician.
Right.
So you start to get into a lot more assessment skills, not just for some of, like, the more life-threatening things, but for just generalized illness. You definitely get those traumatic injuries. You definitely get those, like, those cardiac issues or strokes or diabetic issues, and you get some interventions and some training on how to provide some interventions for those things. But really, foundation is your assessment.
Mm-hmm.
So you're taught how to assess these people. You start getting vital signs involved, and you're going to be transporting these people to the hospital at this EMT level. with you in the back being in charge. You are the attendant in charge of that call.
Right.
Right.
Or AIC for short. Again, we talked about acronyms a little bit, but, but
acronym soup,
can't help yourself.
Yes. Yes. So EMT is the foundational level for any sort of like emergency medical services, volunteer rescue squad, you know, fire department, any of this, or any of these public safety agencies that are transporting patients to the hospital, they're going to require that for the most part, there be EMTs, as a part of that.
And probably way more prevalent, would you say, than EMRs even? Like, because most people
I would say so.
Okay.
Your EMR is not, a lot of the folks, like you said, they're people that their job or their profession or even their desire or time commitment don't necessarily need them to be EMTs, or they don't have the time to commit to going to EMT school, but they want to have some level of training.
Yep.
And the EMR is that for those folks. We have a handful around here. Again, it's those folks who wanted to have something that and some level of training, but they didn't necessarily want to transport patients to the hospital, and they didn't really want to get too far down the rabbit hole. And you know, there's a difference in the responsibility that you have,
right. And we'll talk about that
to EMT.
Yeah, I think we'll definitely get into that in episode 3. Where we'll be talking about ethics, standard of care, like what the scope of practice is for different, you know, for an EMT. But so for now, though, we have the EMR, the EMT. And I did look it up real quick. It looks like it is just EMT. It's not EMTB in Pennsylvania. And then there's after that, the EMT or sorry, AEMT, advanced AEMT.
Advanced EMT,
So this is and you know, I think it also kind of helps to kind of throw in there that this is where we start getting into the designation between BLS,
basic life support
and ALS, right? Advanced life support. Or is
there's
it
there's some debate in the EMS community as to whether advanced EMTs are considered ALS.
Okay. Cuz I wasn't sure. AEMTs and correct, like feel free to correct me. What my understanding is, they are an EMT at their core, like their job is very similar, but then they're bolting on a bunch of extra skills onto that core set of airway management, some medication administration, and airway and then being able to also offer IV fluids and intravenous access, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So yes, that's a perfect way to describe it, Mike. There are additional skills that come into being an advanced EMT. Again, we kind of go back to that idea of like, it's either a stepping stone for a lot of people for like comfort wise. It's like, well, paramedic can maybe be a little intimidating. So it's like, well, let me go do this and then master some of these skills. And then when I go to paramedic school, I'll be that much further along.
Right.
But
it's not necessary,
people,
right? Like you don't have to progress through them.
No, it's not. At one time different states, I know in Virginia, they liked you to go the different steps.
Sure.
Because they liked that you had the experience. But at this particular juncture in our history, we do not, most places don't require that you do that.
Right.
At least in Virginia they don't, and I don't believe in Pennsylvania either.
No.
The other aspect is, you know, maybe that responsibility. There's some things intervention wise as a paramedic you can do that you could cause harm to people if you're not properly trained or you're not as aware as you should be of what's going on with that person. So sometimes it's that. Most of the time, though, I think it is that stepping stone thing.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's an access to training. Maybe a place offers an advanced EMT course, but they don't offer a paramedic course. And to get that, it would be a bigger time commitment.
Right. Or you may have to travel or go commit to being in a college program. So
I think the instructor said it was about twice the time of training.
Yeah.
It's like double the time.
It's a lot. It's a lot of like all of these things have different. Like I'm already looking at this progression and going, man, there's certain skill sets in either the paramedic or the AEMT like scope that I'm like, I really want to do that. Like that seems right. Like something I want the skill set of, but I'm already like, man, this is all like 188 hours is already a huge burden. The idea, and then doing double that, I think for the AEMT course, it's like, it's rough, but you know, we need these things out there. We need people doing these things out there.
The idea of learning area management, different techniques, different tools, and the IV thing is a huge attraction for me.
So there's a good chance that I might wind up progressing into AEMT, but that is to say that like I am totally intimidated, and at the point in life that I'm at, I don't think I would ever have the ability to commit into the highest level of those, which is the paramedic.
Yeah, no.
Which is what you are.
Right. So paramedic programs are different kind of across the board. They have different formats. You guys have talked about the different kinds of programs that EMTs and time commitments that EMT programs, as you did your research, were. Paramedic programs are similar. They do offer some hybrid courses where some of it's online and some of it's, some of it's in a classroom. They do offer academy style programs for 6 months straight where you're going to go, 9 to 5, and then you're going to do your clinical hours on top of that. And, paramedic is a significant amount of time. My class was a 10-month course. It was not for the faint of heart. I will say that it was a tremendous time commitment.
Yeah. I remember you going through it and us chatting along the way I was like, man, this is rough. Well, like
on top of my day job, which was working on an ambulance as a firefighter EMT, I was also living and breathing and eating and sleeping paramedic school. The good news for me was a lot of my clinical hours I was able to do through my employer when I wasn't necessarily on shift.
Sure, yeah.
So I could stay after my designated shift and then do some clinical hours. So that made life a little easier for me. But a 10-month course is definitely not for the faint of heart. But at the same time, because of the time frame I had been an EMT, I wanted to go ahead and get in it because I'm a working adult and I don't have 2 years for an associate's degree.
I know. Yeah.
But that paramedic level, we start to really get into understanding the anatomy and physiology and understanding kind of the pathophysiology of certain conditions, the why behind all of the things.
Right.
Up to this point, and I will say this, EMTs are leagues above as far as training is concerned and knowledge base is concerned. They're leagues above where we were 15 years ago when I first started. I mean, really, I was like 10 years on the job learning some of the things that the EMTs are coming through school now and that they're learning, right?
Which is the great part about the medical profession in general is it is a self, like it the purpose of it. I mean, it's, they call it medicine, but it's science. Like it's a scientific art, right? Mm-hmm. Like, the purpose of it is to continually evolve.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, and that's cool to see because it's been evolving for like, 80 years or so, like since the,
yeah, we're about 80 years into kind of the modern take on
EMTs.
Yeah. So that being said, you really get into the why. You get a lot of clinical experience. I mean, I have hundreds of hours in school, not just in the classroom, but in a hospital setting, on an ambulance, in the various specialty centers that hospitals have.
Right.
Hours and hours of real world experience following either a nurse or another EMS provider, paramedic, and getting to learn and mentor with them as I learn these skills. And this level really takes a lot. It all takes a lot of dedication and passion, but to be a paramedic, you have got to be dedicated to the craft of emergency medicine.
Yeah. And I really do look at it as a craftsmanship type of thing where it's like,
sure.
You know, your EMT is your apprenticeship in a way, right? Mm-hmm. Like you're learning the ropes. You're going to be learning a lot through doing, right? Like right. Essentially the school will only teach you so much, and then you have mm-hmm. to get out there and you have to learn how to be an EMT. AEMT is probably like your journeyman, right? Somebody who's taken it a while and is ready to take things further, like push the craft to do a little bit further. And then like your paramedic level is like your master level. Like, right. Like the person whose role isn't just to know and learn everything all at once. But, I think a lot of that role seems to be, and correct me if I'm wrong, that mentorship like level where it's like you're paired, or at least on the 911 service level where like they're on ambulances, whatever, a paramedic is sometimes and often paired with somebody of lesser skill, of lesser credentials, like an AEMT or an EMT, where they're like a senior partner and they have to, you know, then be not just somebody in charge of everything, but also a mentor to like the other person there.
Sure. You know, as a paramedic, I find myself, I'm not only am I the attendant in charge pretty often, I'm managing a lot of the different aspects of a scene, a lot of the different aspects of that patient care. And maybe I'm not the one that's actually providing the skills. Maybe I'm directing others to provide their skills. So there's sort of some built-in leadership that has to come into being a paramedic. It was one of the bigger adjustments that I had, having to take a step back and delegate
and not just be the guy that's in there doing the thing.
Yes. It was one of the most difficult aspects of it for me. I've started to really come into my own, communicating, hey, this is our care plan. This is what we're going to do for this person.
That's what makes a good leader.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, right. You know, it's easy to jump in there and just do it. It's the being able to step back and let people and coordinate things and let them kind of do their thing. And I mean, that's what makes a good leader.
Yeah.
So, you know, not everybody's going to be at a different point in their journey of doing that. And I think I find that I'm probably an outlier because of how long I waited to go to paramedic school.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
you were an EMT for a while before you became a paramedic.
Over a decade.
Yeah.
And doing it as, you know, in both a volunteer capacity and in a paid capacity at the same time. And I had done a lot of different things as an EMT, had a lot of really, really good opportunities as an EMT. So those really laid a good foundation for becoming a paramedic. The folks coming up through EMT and paramedic school these days, they're sharp. They're really, really sharp. And they have all of that knowledge that we were talking about coming through.
Did you hear that, Max? Right. We're sharp.
We are sharp. We're sharp. I carry sharp things. I don't know if I'm sharp, but I carry sharp things.
You know, kind of to wrap everything up, you know, paramedic is typically going to be that top tier you're going to see on the street day to day. Now, to kind of go off of our show notes and transition to this, there are going to be some additional credentialing things that a paramedic can go ahead and do.
Sure. Yeah.
There's all sorts of things. There's, you can become a critical care paramedic. You can become a flight paramedic. You can become a community paramedic, which bridges the gap between, paramedicine, and social work, and even some like more in-home care aspects of things, provided to people in the community. You can become a did I say tactical paramedic?
Not yet.
Yeah, you could be a tactical paramedic.
Which is the coolest sounding paramedic.
The flight paramedic.
Paramedics are cool.
Yeah.
Too.
You know, there's wilderness paramedics.
Actually, I'd like to be a wilderness paramedic. If I had to pick,
there's I can recommend, once you guys are EMTs, I can recommend a wonderful class here in Virginia for you guys. And it's not taught by Iron Force Consulting Group, but if I can give a shout out.
Yeah, why not?
Go for it.
Okay, so Blue Ridge Adventure Medicine teaches a wonderful wilderness medical program.
Awesome.
It's 30, it's 32 hours long, so it's 16 hours of coursework before you even come to the course, and then 16 hours of in-person, like hands-on. That's all it is. It is a wonderful, wonderful course.
I'm in. Yeah.
So, but that's a perfect example of the additional credentialing that you can get as a paramedic and as an EMT.
And like, I think the perfect way to kind of, you know, wrap this is to say that like, there's these different levels, right? Like you have your EMR, your EMT, your AEMT, your paramedic. And like, it's not, it doesn't end there.
No.
Right. Like you have all of these opportunities to specialize or to broaden your scope of practice, or you can, you know, you can find passions that you have that relate to those other things and then keep like learning. And keep pushing the science.
Yeah, one of the things that the one instructor pointed out a bunch of times is a continuing education, is that this is not the end of the journey. This is this is your base. Yeah. This is your foundation. And from there, you get the chance to build off how you want.
Right. So I think that's, you know, I think that's a really good kind of recap of like what we went through our first, in first class. Like there was a ton of time talking about like the different levels, what they do.
Mm-hmm.
How those different levels interact with, like the different hospitals, like what they like what the purpose is. So like it's all connected. Like that was my key takeaway from the week, is like it's all one big system. It all has to work together, and it may not be seamless, but everything is always, you know, working towards becoming more seamless. It's working towards bettering patient care. It's working towards, actually one of the things that I remember from that is like, is I think it's QI, quality inspection, quality. Oh man, I'm going to forget this terminology, but like there's a kind of, you know, system in place for, EMS where
like, quality improvement.
Yeah. Thank you.
QAQI, quality assurance, quality improvement. Yes.
Where, where like the discipline, like the different, people within EMS are encouraged to assess, figure out what things could be better and, you know, talk about them and encourage them and advocate for them all for the overall end benefit of patient care and EMT safety. You know, and like better quality of life for everybody involved. So, I thought that was a really cool aspect of that whole profession, because unfortunately I can tell you firsthand that in a lot of the corporate world, that is not the case. Like they're like, they may say that they encourage people to have quality, you know, improvements, but at the end of the day, that isn't necessarily baked into the core,
ethos
of or core culture of that profession, right? But it is for EMS.
And I think the idea of having an open book that where someone that's just an EMT can help potentially, you know, I said potentially.
I'm gonna stop you right there for just a second. You are never just an EMT.
We're not just EMTs yet. We are.
But an EMT that's starting out could potentially have an effect, a ripple effect, to improve, you know, the entire group that's around them, which I think is awesome.
So we learned about like the culture of EMTs, of emergency services, of the different levels, different roles, responsibilities, like, you know, how it all kind of connects together. We did discuss a little bit of history of how the EMS came about. It's a fascinating story. There's a lot of different aspects to it that, if you have the time, you should definitely dive into. But like essentially, like the brief overview is that, for many years before like the 1960s, ambulance services existed, but there just was not a coordination or like a standard of care that was really leading to good outcomes. And then in the 1960s, there was this kind of landmark paper called the White Paper, right? And the actual name of the paper is The Accidental Death and Disability, the Neglected Disease of Modern Society. Which,
why didn't they just stick with that?
I don't, you know, it's the white paper certainly sounds a bit catchier, but that sparked a huge, like, catalyst in changing things for, you know, kind of creating and starting the EMS movement. I'm sure you know a bunch more about it than I do, Jonathan, kind of living that life. But I knew that, that it seems like that was the nexus, if you will, of when things changed. And what I found really interesting too, is like, while like that was kind of like the public service aspect of it, that was all kind of led by the Department of Transportation, side of things, you know, it's that combined with like shared learnings throughout throughout the history of trauma, which usually coincides with warfare of like, that's where we learned a lot of, triage and patient management and treatment. Those two things kind of coming together in the 60s of like, okay, well, we've learned a lot about treating people in war over the last few centuries. And we've learned that what we need to do is improve our ability to transport people and get care on scene quickly. And those two things coming together going, okay, we're going to kind of bring this shared learning and kind of, you know, mission together to like really increase and found the modern EMS world. Like
there was a statistic. They said 90% increase in mortality or decrease in mortality after that whole thing came through.
Was it? I didn't catch that statistic, but I'm sure there is a huge
There's a massive difference between before that point when things kind of came together and it was like a national system and after.
Yeah, I mean, it's huge. Like that was a kind of big turning point, and one that like, I bet you we could probably go into podcast on of like the history of EMS, which who knows, maybe we'll do. Sure. And it would be great to get in some awesome people that are like, you know, involved in different aspects of that history. As a matter of fact, Jonathan was informing us about what was the organization in Pittsburgh.
Freedom House,
which was an early, you know, kind of paramedic program here in Pennsylvania, right?
The first paramedic
program.
Yeah.
So Pennsylvania history baked into EMS history right here in the state. That would be a huge, like, I would love to explore that more and talk about it and kind of inform people. But like it's got a huge history all in and of itself, just like the fire service and police history, you know, all different professions have like very interesting kind of backgrounds. You can see how all these things kind of work together to create where we're at now. That was week one. And like, you know, a lot of that stuff I may have been experienced or exposed to beforehand, but hearing it in person was kind of nice, and you know, the paramedics teaching the course really kind of gave it some context.
Absolutely.
So the last topic of that particular class, which coincided well with like, hey, there's an overall vision for EMTs and the EMS services. Then it was very much focused on the EMTs themselves. Like we went from the macro level to the micro level in the sense that like, hey, crucial to all of this is the provider, right? The person, the EMT at the core of it, because without them, none of this other stuff works. So we need to take care of these people, and they need to stay healthy, and they need to, you know, they're going to be going through some shit. Like
they're going to be seeing horrible, no matter what you do, you're going to be seeing horrible things.
Yeah.
And you're going to be experiencing stressful situations. It's the nature of the job. So if you're not taking care of yourself physically, mentally, all those things, you're not going to last very long. And one of the things they talked about was the average length of a career for an EMT is 4 years, you know, which is crazy to think about. If you spend 6 months of just getting training for that job, for your career to last, you know, a little less than twice that, you know, a little less than right. four times that amount. Like, it's just kind of crazy.
What I found funny is the first time I ever heard somebody tell me that statistic, they used the word lifespan. And I was like,
wait,
what?
What?
Like, the lifespan of an EMT is 4 years? Like, wait a second. Like, I'm not, like, you know, do I need EMTs coming to me being an EMT? Like, yeah, but it was, you know, like, it is not a long-lived profession. Like, people get into it. And it's got a lot of burnout. So, like, I think it's also baked into the culture that, or especially, like, I don't know, would you call it postmodern or contemporary culture, whatever it means to be now, the now, is, like, it's very much, like, we need to take care of our own. We need to make sure that they're supported. We need to have mental services available. We need to have health services available. We need to know, like, they need to know that they have the support behind them. And a lot of states and national level stuff do that.
Well, I think they're realizing that if they don't do that, the people that they're spending the time to train aren't going to be there when they need them. Like, the reality is they need more hands on deck, period, and a discussion. And the only way we're going to be able to keep those people on that are experienced, that we're going to get them to a point of going for their advanced training or their paramedic training, is to support them as best as we can. You know, and I think that's something that comes out of, like, we're talking about things that come through warfare. Well, the reality is through warfare and seeing what soldiers go through, they have a better idea of how to keep that person healthy throughout. And, you know, that's physically and mentally.
Mm-hmm.
And I think more of an idea or an awareness or a structure to be able to do that is only going to help with paramedics, with EMTs, with policemen, whatever, you know, fill in the blank.
Yeah.
We are seeing a culture shift. In relation to provider well-being. The landscape looks completely different than when I started 15 years ago. For the positive, we are far, 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 far from being perfect. But just the fact that, you know, they're talking about these resources and talking about EMS provider well-being in your class now, it is a change. You know, the kind of the conversation that we had back in the day was the tagline, who's the most important person on scene? I am. And that was sort of the end of our conversation related to well-being. It was just about safety on scene, yep. And you have to take care of yourself first. And that was the whole conversation. But we didn't talk about, you know, how to manage stress. We didn't talk about how to actually talk about the bad things that we see at work.
Right.
We didn't talk about how to communicate with our peers
in
a caring way, as opposed to hazing them.
Yeah.
Which, you know, little pranks and jokes have always been part of public safety. But there's also a long storied history of hazing, unfortunately. And I think we've done a really good job of starting to get that out of public safety, out of EMS, out of fire service. And the landscape has changed. Not every department's doing all the things I'm talking about as far as, like, being more pro provider well-being.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are still stuck in an old school mentality. But by and large, we're seeing more and more organizations adopting peer support groups, critical incident stress debriefs, not having employee assistance programs that are punitive towards the person because they're having issues at work or whatever, having employee assistance programs because it's actually okay to go ask for help.
Right.
Yeah.
And you know, even having something like a therapist or a counselor that's on staff for your department, we're seeing more and more of that, and it's a positive benefit to the organizations as a whole and to the profession as a whole.
One of the things
I digress.
I think it's important for an audience to hear this stuff if they're considering going into the profession, to know that hey, there is a continually improving culture around supporting providers, supporting the EMS service workers.
I had a question for you. One of the things that every one of the instructors repeated at one point was the idea of switching up what you're doing, going from the high stress environment to a low stress environment. How important do you think that is for, like, your lifespan in the career?
I think that I think that as a provider, it is very important that you have varying aspirations within the career field. You know, for myself, I got very into being an EMT and just doing the EMT grunt work for a long time. And that started to kind of put some strain on me. I was like, what do I really want to do? Well, I want to get into tactical medicine. All right. So I started as a student learning as much as I could. And then I was like, well, what else do I want to do? Oh man, let's get into like instructing. And so I started doing the education aspect of things. And so throughout my career, I've had different kind of facets that I've been interested in and pursued. And that has kept the job more fresh for me than it would otherwise be. But your instructor's absolutely right. I think to have some longevity in this career, you need to like find what you're interested in relation to it and actually pursue those things.
Right.
And maybe that means, hey, I'm not on an ambulance all the time. I actually work in the office and I do some admin stuff and some educational stuff. But those things are important for longevity.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
And I think, that was the kind of overall approach of like, you know, you got to make sure that you're taking care of the EMTs, that you are putting yourself in the picture, right? Like, cause I think it's the natural inclination of most EMTs or people that get into this line of work to like have a bit of that, like what is it? The white knight syndrome? Like,
yeah.
Like, okay, I'm going to forsake myself to do the thing for others. Right. There are a lot of people that do that. I think a lot of people sometimes like, you know, those, the people who fall into that category, often have to be reminded of like, hey, you know, you need to make sure that you're taken care of too. Like you have to make sure that you are healthy for tomorrow because it's not just about today. It's not just about the moment that you're in. You being healthier is going to lead to better outcomes for all the people that you can help. So, there seems to be a very big emphasis on that, especially in EMT training. And it sounds like, kind of working its way out to like the different services out there too.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, the fact of the matter is, and I wish, I'm so glad we're able to have this conversation because I wish going into it, somebody would have had this conversation with me. I wish I would have been more aware of these things. I knew that I'm going to see some bad stuff, but I didn't understand the extent. I don't think it's possible to understand the extent until you're well in it. And depending on the culture you're brought up in, it may be okay to talk about the things. It may not be okay to talk about the things.
Yeah.
We're trending more towards it being okay to talk about stuff, and you should be.
To be.
I do want to say this. If anybody tells you that it's not okay to talk about something bad that you've witnessed, because we get to see people at their on their worst day. If anybody tells you that it's not okay to talk about those things, like in a safe circle, they're wrong. Don't listen to them. Go find somebody that is a safe person to talk to about it, because you cannot carry all of this stuff that you're going to see and be involved in and not talk about it. Talk about it. Find somebody you trust.
I'm going to be 100% real and honest right now. The thing that I'm probably most not nervous, but like that I find that I am most uneasy about is that aspect of being an EMT. Like the idea that I may come across things that humans should not have to see, like that in modern, like polite and healthy society, we don't have to be confronted with in like humans have dealt with for eons, right? Like we used to have to, you know, witness our kin being eaten by a saber-toothed tiger. It's not like we can't deal with traumatic stuff, but we're so not like exposed to it. Like we are so far removed from it nowadays that like I'm legitimately concerned that like, do I think I'll work through it? Yes. Do I think I need to make sure I keep it very top of mind that I need to like do it in a healthy manner? Yes. Yeah. Like for sure. Yeah, and, and knowing that there's things out there, to support that and like that there's people to talk to about it, is a comfort factor.
And like, more importantly, that it's encouraged and emphasized. Because the structure being there is one thing. The culture encouraging and making an emphasis on you need to do this is huge. Because it takes all the stigma away from it.
Yeah. So we've talked a bunch about like, oh, sorry. Did you want to say something? Well,
just before we move on from this, while we're talking about it, and we may delve more into this later.
Oh, I'm 100% sure we will.
Mm-hmm. But what I would like to do, I'm going to send you guys some links for some resources, and they're going to be below in whatever
in the show notes
format they need. Yeah, they're going to be in the show notes. So if at any point somebody listening to this needs some sort of resource, we're going to put some links down there, and you should be able to find those resources. Yep. That's important that we express that to you guys. Yeah.
And if you ever need anything, anybody listening, that's like, you know what, I really wish I could get more information from that Jonathan guy. You know, you can reach out to us at ridealongpodcasting@gmail.com, and we're happy to be a resource with whatever knowledge we have. And, you know, I'm sure Jonathan's more than willing to kind of help out a fellow emergency services member. Cool. So yeah, the big emphasis was personal care, personal health, you know, mental health, taking care of all that stuff. There was other stuff too, which I'm sure we're going to get to more of in future episodes. Other ways that EMTs protect themselves. I think the number one thing, which I think we'll have whole discussions on this, is scene safety.
Yeah.
PPE, personal protective equipment, like how that should be used and why, like the different, you know, threats out there for people health wise, physically wise, mentally wise. There are ways to protect yourself, and you should be taking advantage of all of them to make sure that you stay healthy.
Yes.
That was kind of like the big topics overall, like EMS overview and EMT well-being and health. So that's, you know, we've got plenty more coming. Like we have a lot more topics to go through.
We're going to touch on all these,
but that was the big ones from the first week of class. And what we like to end with, or the last couple segments that we'll get into, is there was one thing which I hope everyone sticks around for each week in the podcast, because that's why we're putting Max's after the discussion topic, because from these discussions we learn to use things.
Yes.
And everyone loves stuff. So Max has a cool segment and a great tool for you tonight in Tools of the Trade.
So during the class, when we were talking about the difference between trauma one centers, trauma two centers, all those things, one of the instructors told us about a thing called PAMedic.org. Now, this is something that is just in Pennsylvania. It is a website, and the idea being is that you can go on to this website. It instantly is telling you where the closest centers are to you, what they specialize in.
What do you mean by center?
Trauma center. So whether it's a trauma one, trauma two, trauma three, trauma four, cardiac, burn, all those things.
Well, it's hospitals.
Hospitals, yeah. So they're telling you what each of these hospitals do, what their rating is. It is also telling you whether or not they're open or closed. That's more for the EMT side of things. So if you're going to be transporting someone, are they open for burn?
Like how busy are they?
How busy are they? Also, they're telling you the drive time, and it instantly is connecting to the GPS on your phone. So you're not only getting what's close to you, you're not only getting what they do, but you're also getting how long it's going to take to get there and the route. So like it is a crazy, it's an amazing, amazing, amazing resource. And it is one of those things that when both of us saw it and we actually put it on the phone and opened it up, I was like, oh my God. Like we immediately posted it to our friends groups, like, guys, you should download this thing.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it is in PA only.
Well, this particular aspect,
I
looked in the other states around, particularly New Jersey, and I looked in Maryland as well. They have some similar systems, but they are not an all-encompassing, easy-to-use, well-designed interface.
Yeah.
Which, for once, I am going to give kudos where kudos is due to whatever state resource agency, whatever created this. PAMedic.org. They did a great job, because it's a singular focus thing. You open it up, tells you where you are, and what the nearest hospital is and like some other metadata about it. But like, it is a great tool for a pair, like a somebody who's in the EMS services to know exactly where they can go at any one time.
And I mean, it's,
but it works for the normal person too.
Exactly.
Like, what hospital is nearby?
You don't have to be a paramedic or an EMT to use this. But it's definitely centered towards that person.
Yeah. Other states have like a more convoluted system, like where it's like a text-based thing where you can see what centers or what hospitals have capacity. And like, it's kind of up to the EMTs to know what their capabilities are, but they don't, it's not like this thing that's like an approachable tool that just tells you everything all at once. It's like, you have to, like, this seems to be the only one that I've found, but I'm sure there's somebody out there that's like, oh no, like Ohio has this thing or like Virginia has this other thing. But PA Medic is like a great tool that we picked up from
so
the first class.
Just as an example, I just pulled it up and it's showing me that 5.5 miles from here, 13 minutes travel time, Lehigh Valley Hospital, Cedar Crest, is green, so it's open. It's showing all the capabilities, and you can also go through the capability. If you need, say, a pediatric care, it is going to show you under that heading what's available. So it is really specific if it needs to be. It can also be just, you know, broad ranging. So it really is amazing.
By the way, if anybody isn't aware, this is a little extra tip for this episode. If you're on an iPhone, I know it works on an iPhone. I bet you there's one for Android as well. Any website that you're in, you can go into like the menu, like on Chrome, you go into the menu, hit the menu button. You can have it add to your home screen.
I did not know that.
Yeah. So I have on my home screen, like the PA Medic app, and it looks like an app.
It looks like an app.
And I hit that button and then I have it instantly available. So I keep it on my home screen for emergency situations.
Yeah. I learned that in that class from him. And then I've already added a bunch of other things to my home screen because there are certain things it'd be nice to just hit a button and bring it up.
Yeah.
So that is your...
There's things that I would normally say that are probably on your home screen, but it's probably not safe for work.
Mine are all safe for work. Thank you very much. But that's your tool of trade. Again, pamedic.org. And like he was saying, you can bring it up on your home screen. You hit the button, the icon, it treats it like an app, and it brings it right up.
Yep. And then, so Max's tool of the trade, you know, what we like to end on before we finish the podcast is our sage advisor giving us our student tip. Any learning advice for this week, sir?
So this is what you're going to hear from your instructors. And however it best suits you, because people are going to receive their books for class. They may receive a physical book, or they may receive a digital book, or in conjunction, a physical and a digital book. But my tip for the week for this episode is going to be, you've got to get in the book. You have to. However you can most easily get into that book and start to read it, you've got to get in the book and you got to read it. It's going to have all the answers for all your homework, all your quizzes. So you got to get in there. You got to read the book. I know that's a drag, but it's going to behoove you to do that. So get in the book.
Behoovement.
Yes. Get in there, read the book. If you need to take notes out of the book, do that.
Highlighters work really well.
Yeah. I mean, I cannot understate that.
You have free highlighters at class.
Yeah. I cannot understate that though. You've got to get in the book. You've got to study the book. You know, if you're doing, eventually when you're doing your clinical time, and we've got downtime because it's, you know, there's something about this profession. When you need a call, you're not necessarily going to get it right when you need it. So, you're going to have some downtime to be studying, and you should be studying. So get in the book.
Nice. All right. Well, I think that kind of brings us to the end of tonight's episode.
Yep.
Where we have, we've gone through our entire first week, or no, our first class from week one. If you have questions, you want to know more, you can reach out to us at ridealongpodcasting@gmail.com.
You can also reach us at Facebook.
Yep.
And that is Ride Along EMT School.
Right.
Or on YouTube, it is Ride Along EMT School Podcast. So we will be...
It'll be in the notes.
It'll be in the notes. There's links and stuff. There'll be links for other social medias as we go along. But if you want to reach out any of those formats, feel free. The email, especially if you have any questions or requests, if you want to hear about a certain topic, if you have a suggestion for a topic, reach out.
Yep. And let us know if you have decided to go to EMT school. We'd love to take the journey with you and talk more about it. So with that, we'll wrap up tonight's episode. And thank you all for taking the ride along with us. And we'll see you next time. This podcast is for educational and storytelling purposes only. It is not medical advice or official EMT training. Always follow your accredited instructors and local protocols. Heartbeats racing in-